What's up, Pewter Peeps?
Hello.
Welcome in.
Thank you.
It is the All New Pewter Cast. The Ben is in an ass today. It is the All New Pewter Cast, your favorite spot for Bucks news analysis, takes hot and otherwise, and all of your favorite shit talking from
takes and otherwise.
Let's just put it that way here as part of the Fan United Network. That is Ren. I am Steve Carney. It is great to have you here on this Wednesday afternoon. Ren, first off, got to say thank you to Big Storm Brewing for having us out on Thursday for the first round of the drafts. But I want to ask how your weekend went and how excited are you for what is upcoming?
Well, my weekend went fine. Worked most of it, you know.
Ditto.
Yeah, exactly. You know, whatever. But since, you know, I last saw you at Big Storm Brewery at the first night of the draft on Thursday, yeah, everything's been good, man. Nothing really, you know, amazing to report. I do have to take out the Oriental rug today and take it on the carport and shampoo it. So, you know, things like that. I got that going on. Got an ottoman in. It's the third one. This one's finally the right color. Cheryl's wanted something to take all her pillows. She's one of those decorative people, you know, as far as her bed. Like, as soon as she wakes up, she makes her bed. It looks like a hotel bed, and it's got all these pillows on it. So she wanted a place to put the pillows instead of, like, on the floor. So basically, it's a storage ottoman. Yes, exactly. And the third one is here, and it's the right color. So hooray. But yeah, everything's been good, man. How about you?
Yeah, it was a good weekend for me. I got a chance to work. I engineered three Rays games at Tropicana Field. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against the Houston Astros in Spanish. I get to do Spanish radio, which is an interesting setup because the Spanish radio broadcasters, Ricardo Taveras and Enrique Oliu, two guys that I've known forever and I consider to be two of my better friends in the industry. They're not very serious when it comes to how things work. Like, they are very relaxed, very casual, and sometimes it can be kind of crazy when things get going, because
are they good enough for government work type of people?
No, they're much better than that, but it's difficult for me because Spanish isn't my first language. And so I speak it. I speak it and I understand it well enough, having spent a decade inside of a Major League Baseball clubhouse with, you know, Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and Cubans. Right. So I understand it very well. I speak it okay. But when you've got some of the colloquialisms that they use, it was difficult for me, at least the first day, to pick out, okay, this is when you need to go to break. And so, because as the engineer on the Spanish side, I'm the person that does the commercial breaks. And so it took me a while to figure that out, but it was fun. I had a good weekend of watching Rays baseball and thinking about what we did. And by we, I mean the Buccaneers, did for the draft. And we'll get into the draft here in just a minute, but we definitely
really big show.
Yeah, we had a huge show today, is because we haven't had a chance to talk about what the Bucks did during the draft,
right?
But I wanted to bring this up first, sure. Because this story broke, I believe, was it this morning or yesterday, about defensive line coach Casey Rogers.
Yeah,
it broke yesterday afternoon that he was named the John Teerlink Defensive Line Coach of the Year by coaches across the league. And that's a pretty big honor for a defensive line coach, for a position coach to get your Coach of the Year award for the league, right? Is quite,
and voted on by your peers is the real thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be different if it was voted on by, you know, Ren or I, or, you know, Greg Allman AP, or Stroud, AP.
No, yeah, these beat writers, because beat writers don't know, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they know the Bucks, but like, you know, they don't watch the Colts. Like, how the Colts defensive line do this year? I don't know. You know, it's kind of one of the big things I have problem with Hall of Fame voting. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, like you're solely really relying on, unless they're a first ballot, you're solely relying on the person's presentation, because you really, you know, you've heard the person's name, but you don't know if they're an all pro or not, or a pro bowler or not, or a Hall of Famer or not. So
it's not was it a surprise to you that, that Rodgers ended up with this award?
Probably not. There's a couple ways to look at this. One, it's deserving. Because mm-hmm. of the Bucks defensive line. I mean, now we've had the best rush defense 2 years in a row. So you can look at it as like an accumulative, you know, hey, man, this happened twice in a row. It's time to give this guy an award. You know, sort of like mm-hmm. Peter Jackson in Lord of the Rings. And, you know, the third one, when they finally put out the third one, he won all his, you know, his Academy Awards. But then you can look at it like, well, you know, you got Sue and you got a really good, you got a lot of good players. And of course mm-hmm. that's probably going to go hand in hand. So, Sue being a veteran and then JPP being a veteran and then, but you really don't know how much of Shaq Barrett's 19 and a half sacks as his first year as a $4 million 1 year, prove it, you know, prove it edge rusher out of Denver. How much was that Casey Rogers or how much was that Shaq Barrett? But, you know, I think it's great. And as a Bucks fan, you know, we'll look at these things like, we have the best linebacking core. Well, we have a really good linebacking core. Do we have the best? I'd have to say yes. We have a really good receiving core. Okay. Like, we have the best receiving core. We have a really good receiving core. Do we have the best? I don't know. You know, there's other really good receiving cores out there. So, only being hyper focused on the Bucks, yes, it's deserving, but there's, you know, I think being number one against the run 2 years in a row really helped them, prop him up. But it's definitely not, it's not an award that you go, huh? You know, kind of like when Caitlyn Jenner won Woman of the Year, you're like, what? Like, really? Like, come on now. Like, I see where you're going with this. And, you know, I'm not going to say that she didn't deserve it, but like that can't be the best candidate.
I'm gonna stay away from Caitlyn Jenner with this, but I do think
future that governor of California. Did you see that she's running?
Yeah, I did see she is running for governor of California and not getting a whole lot of support, not even within her own family. But I look at what Casey Rogers did, mm-hmm. and I think that being number one against the run is a good, you know, is probably a big reason why, mm-hmm. but being number one against the run and missing, you know, a huge piece in the middle, like Vita Vea for a huge chunk last year, mm-hmm. probably is what ended up putting Casey over the top.
That's a good point.
You know, if you're doing it with Vita Vea, it's one thing. Doing it with Stevie McClendon and Nacho mm-hmm. in the middle is something completely different. And yeah, I
think Nacho started more games than, you know, Vita did.
Mm-hmm.
Twice as many games, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, right. So being able to keep Nacho in there and then keeping the number one run defense. Yeah, that's true. So,
I think that's probably a bigger reason for why Casey got the award, but it's
so you're saying if Devin White didn't break Vita Vea's ankle, he wouldn't get the award.
No, I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying that a lot of coaches outside, you know, that are on the outside looking in probably mm-hmm. saw Vita Vea go down, and the fact that it was business as usual for the Buccaneers against the run. I think that that's a big, they probably went, wow, he's more deserving than even we thought. That okay. So that's what I think.
I like it. So
congratulations to Casey. Mm-hmm. He'll get an opportunity now to try and make it two in a row. We'll see if that can you imagine what it's going to take for Casey to win this award next year as well? They probably would have to give up, I don't know, less than 50 yards rushing per game or something like that for him to and go 16-0.
17-0.
16-1.
Well, that one loss, that's, you know, that's really going to blow it for him.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. We'll about repeating. I don't know what it's going to take, but, you know, I like his chances.
Yeah. The only thing is, you know, with Coach of the Year awards, it seems like the expectations in order to repeat are so much higher than the expectations are when, you know, for say an NFL MVP. You know, if Aaron Rodgers wins the NFL MVP this year, and now if he were to win it next year, well, I mean, he would probably be doing it with another team, but which I think may kind of throw a monkey wrench into my argument. But it would be, if he were to go back to Green Bay to win the MVP next year, he can't have a similar sort of year that he had this year. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
So we'll see. But again, congratulations to Casey. He's gonna have some toys on defense. Maybe not for himself, but there are going to be some extra toys on defense this year that the defensive coaches are going to get an opportunity to play with. We'll get to those here in just a moment. But this episode of the PeterCast is brought to you in part by Danette May and Mindful Health LLC, featuring Danette May's top superfood product from her Earth Echo Foods line, and that is Cacao Bliss. And it's,
Did you get chocolate yours?
I have not gotten mine yet. Have you gotten yours yet?
Yeah. No. I got mine like last week. It came with like a cookbook. Nice. And a really cool kind of coffee mug. I mean, it's a really cool, it's like glass, so it's ceramic, so it's like a coffee mug. So, and when it came in, I gave it to Cheryl. I'm like, oh, this is for you, because it's like healthy chocolate, like, you know, knock your stuff out, do what you want to do. And then I saw the cup and I was like, ooh, my new coffee cup for the podcast. And she was like, I thought you gave this to me. I really like that cup. So I grabbed it and I made coffee with it, but there's no handle.
Oh, so
it doesn't have a handle. So after, you know, I had my cup of coffee, I, you know,
it burned the hell out of your fingers.
I took it back to Shaw. I go, this is officially now your cup. I have no use for this whatsoever. Looks super cool. You know, but, yeah, but for practical purposes, for what I need it for, it's not working. But yeah, the cookbook is cool and the chocolate's here, and I can't wait to for Cheryl to start experimenting with it.
Yeah, Earth Echo Foods, they start with 100% organic cacao beans. They are kissed by the sun, obviously. A great line. Yes, thank you, Bill Rafferty.
You're welcome. Yes.
You know, they blend those cacao beans with turmeric, MCT oil, coconut, Himalayan sea salt, cinnamon, black pepper for a perfect blend that makes you feel your best that you ever have. It's a truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate and removes cravings, facilitates weight loss. I'm going to get that word right one of these days. Boosts energy and reduce, no, facilitate.
Oh.
And come on, weight loss, jerk. And helps reduce inflammation with one simple drink. Not only that, it is friendly to paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegan, and vegetarian diets. And for the last 8 years, they have been a leader in the superfoods market and are proud to have served millions of customers worldwide. You can get up to 15% off of your order using the code MINUTE15. Go to earthechofoods.com/minutemedia to order now. Use the promo code MINUTE15 and save 15% off your order. Coming up, we made a prediction about how the Bucks are going to start to get under the salary cap in order to have a little maneuvering. One of those pieces happened this week. We will tell you about it next on the PeterCast. Ren,
yes.
We talked about the salary cap situation for the Bucks after all the signings they did before the draft. And we came up with two separate ideas about how the Buccaneers could give themselves some breathing room in order to do whatever they needed to do, you know, money-wise to help themselves out for the start of the regular season when it comes to, you know, signing the draft class and whatever, oh crap,
somebody went down and have free agent.
And the first piece that you and I both talked about was asking Cameron Brate to take a pay cut.
Personally. Yeah. Knocking on his door.
Yep.
Hey, Cam.
It's Jason.
It's Jason. Actually, no, I'm kidding. It's Ren and Steve.
Yes. But we had thought that probably the first step would have been for Jason Light to go to Cam Brayton, his agent, and say, look, you know, $6 million ain't going to cut it this year. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have the room for you at $6 million. We want to keep you, but it needs to be at a reduced rate. And
Cameron said,
he said, okay.
All right.
Now it was
funny. I'll play for free.
No, he didn't say I'll play for free, but the idea was, and we talked about this now a couple of weeks ago,
right?
Would be Cameron Brate taking a cut from $6 million to $3 million. And I seem to remember somebody on this podcast laughing at me.
I thought that was ridiculous.
A ridiculous number. And I said, you okay, well, then this is business. You start at three and you say, okay, you know, we like you. We want you to be here. Can you at least take a $2 million pay cut? We'll pay you four.
And I said, that's perfect. That's exactly what I would get up behind 100%. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
And so what happens is the Buccaneers go to Cameron Brate and they ask him to take a 50% pay cut. And he agrees. It's almost 50%. $3.075 million is now Cameron Brate's number for the 2021 season. So he took a 50% pay cut.
Do you think they came to him and said, we're going to pay you two, and he talked him up to three?
It's business. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, these are business people. I'm sure that they didn't say, we'll pay you three. And he went, okay. That never happens. It's just like, you know, when you paid for your car, when you paid for your house, you never take the first offer. Never. So I'm sure it was two and a half, maybe. They may have said, we can do two and a half. And he said, how about three and a half? And they came to an agreement of just over three. It makes Brayton, his agent, feel like they got a good deal out of it.
I don't know how you get a 50% pay cut and think you got a good deal out of it.
Because it's better than a 66% pay cut.
Or 100% pay cut.
Or 100%. Yeah. You know, just put it this way. If you don't say yes, we're going to freaking gut you. And you're going to
like living in Tampa? You like the new house you just bought?
Yep. Yeah. You don't want to just be Brooks arm candy.
Right.
Here you go. Take a pay cut.
You want to have a job, Cameron?
Yeah. Would you like to keep your job? This is how you keep your job.
But that allowed
us to be smart.
Yes. Allowed you to call me out rightfully on the show. For the first time.
And maybe the last.
No, I doubt it. But, you know, it is a rare occurrence. You know, you're smart. I'm not. I'm not. What else did Happy Gilmore say to Chubbs?
I think it's something about like, you're smart, I'm dumb. You're
right, I was wrong.
You're attractive, I'm less so.
As long as you got that straight.
Exactly. But what it did do is it allowed the Bucks to have some more room in order to bring back Antonio Brown as that deal. Is now in place as well. And so
do you think the Bucks are waiting for his case to clear up? Like they weren't going to sign him until something happened on that. Cause that seemed to be sort of the vibe. Cause as soon as that came out, Stroud came out right away and said, now look for the Bucks to sign him.
Well, I don't think you want to sign somebody that could be facing additional sanctions.
Right.
From the league.
You don't want to sign somebody to a couple million dollar contract that will be in jail by August.
Yeah. Or is going to miss the first eight games of the season again for personal conduct policy issues. So
still can happen.
I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think that the league's going to go any further on this.
James was never convicted and he got three games.
We'll see what happens.
We will see what happens.
So, but you know, I'm just curious to get your thoughts on this, Ren.
Sure.
Now with, you know, you've got Evans, you've got Godwin, you've got AB,
yeah,
you've got Scotty Miller, You've got Tyler Johnson back.
Yes.
You know, so you have your top five receivers,
mm-hmm.
All here again, looking for another run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll get into, you know, what your thoughts are on the wide receiver that the Buccaneers drafted coming up here. But, you know, is there a point when, you know, are there too many ingredients for Tom Brady? Because you've got those five receivers, you've got Gronk, you've got Cameron Brate, you've got a returning OJ Howard, and that's eight receivers.
And now you got Bernard, Giovanni Bernard, who's catches nine. The ball.
That's nine. You know, is there, you know, where's the point where there might be too many options? And you know, are all of these options going to cause discord because somebody's going to get angry that they're not getting their touches?
Answer the second part first is no. Because we've seen it, because it's happened, you know, like Mike Evans started getting, like 2 years ago, Mike Evans got his touches as soon as Jameis left. that really happened. But 2 years ago, you know, Chris Godwin made the Pro Bowl. He led the team in receptions. He led the team in yards. I think he led the team in touchdowns. So you've seen it happen. And then you saw it happen this year where, you know, Antonio Brown, like you said, with an 8-game suspension, he didn't come back till he didn't get there till game 8. And the leading receiver in yards sat the bench, and you barely heard from him again. It's Scotty Miller, who was leading the team in total yardage. So, and he didn't say anything. And then Mike Evans didn't say anything all year long. Where some games, remember, like we were like week 5, week 6, and we're like, Mike Evans isn't going to get 1,000 yards. Like,
yeah, where is Mike Evans? He's on.
Yeah, where's Mike Evans? He's, you know, like. 8 games in, Scotty Miller was leading the team, and he didn't have 400 yards. It was like 357, you know? So it was like, what's going on here? We were doing okay. You know, we lost to Chicago, but, you know, we came back against the Chargers. It was definitely not the team we saw post bye week, but so I don't think anyone's really going to complain. I think everyone's bought in. I think everyone knows what's at stake here and what a special group of players all over the roster that they have. And if they could kind of keep their mouth shut, and then when their number's called, do their best and do their job, that, you know, it's all going to work out, which they saw happen last year. When does many become too many? I'm sure there's a number. I don't care what it is. Like it's, you know, that is not something when you try to improve your depth on your roster with a better player. If the side effect is, okay, he's not going to get the ball enough, like that's not really an argument. You know, it should not come into play. So do they have too many weapons? I mean, for everyone to get there, what's everyone's share? I mean, it's such a, you know, complicated, like how many is not enough? Like as long as you win, who cares? Like we saw like Mike Evans go without getting, you know, a catch in some games, you know. So if OJ Howard finishes the season with 32 catches for 540 yards and 2 touchdowns, we win the Super Bowl or go and make the playoffs and make the NFC championship game or win a play, you know, it's a successful season, are we gonna go, hey, what a great year, but gosh, OJ Howard didn't get the ball enough? You know,
I think part of it is that us as fans, we want to see the individual accolades as much as the team success. I mean, team success should always be number one.
I don't think we care anymore. I think
really, really, you don't want to see Chris Godwin or Mike Evans making a Pro Bowl. You don't want to see.
I'm with you. I hear you. I absolutely hear you. But we're winning, so I don't care anymore. When we were losing in 6-10 and 7-9. And 5-11, then yeah, that's what you hang your hat on. You're kind of like, as a fan, well, okay, yeah, we're not very good, but we got a really good wide receiver, or we got a really good linebacker, or we got a really good nose tackle, or hey, our running back's really good. That's sort of when you kind of push for these accolades. But when you're winning, and you know, well, the Bucs right now are on what, an 8-game win streak, I think it is. They've won 8 in a row.
Yeah.
So, you know, right in the middle of a 28-0 win streak here. So I don't care anymore. And I don't think they do either. I just think winning totally changes your perspective as a fan on these individual accolades. Like, yes, I want them to succeed. Yes, I think it'd be great for them to get these accolades, and I'm rooting for them, and whatever I can do on social media and podcasts and make the statement for them, if I think they deserve it, I will. But if they don't get it, I'm not going to get all, you know, bent out of shape about it, because I don't care, because we're in the playoffs. Like, okay, no big deal. Because at the end, like I said at the beginning, it's all about winning. As long as you win, no one cares.
Yeah, I think the other thing that really makes a difference on top of winning is the fact that there aren't, I don't want to say there aren't any, but it seems like there aren't as many guys that are concerned about that bonus in their contract because of all the winning. All of these guys have bonuses that right. say if you make the Pro Bowl, you get an extra 250 large, you get an extra 500 large.
Right.
I would never sign
a contract like that.
You would never want a contract that pays you more for individual accolades.
No, I'd make them give me the money some other way, or individual accolades. Yes. Like, but if it was personally, but it was all on me, like I would like, say it's like, okay, you get an extra $1 million if you make the Pro Bowl. As a player, I would say, how about pick a position? What position am I playing?
You were playing defensive back.
Okay, I'm playing defensive back. Instead of making the Pro Bowl, I would rather have, how about we take $500,000 if I get 5 interceptions and $500,000 if I get 10 pass breakups? Because those are on me. This is something that I can directly control.
Okay.
You know, with a Pro Bowl, it's just the more you see and the older you get, you realize it's not, again, you know, it's voted on by writers who don't get to watch everybody. You know, it's voted on by the fans who are only going to vote for their own players or for their own team. Mm-hmm. And so whoever who has the biggest fan base out there, like,
that's why there's always so many Dallas Cowboys.
Like, go on Dallas Cowboys Twitter. They have 9 million followers. The Bucks last year at this time had like 750,000. I think they just crossed over 1 million finally.
Yeah, they were right at 1 million as of a couple of days ago. They were they had like 997,000 followers.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
So it's a stack against or for whatever team that you play for. So I would never sign a contract that would give me a bonus for a Pro Bowl. I would ask my agent to do something where it would be something more in my control to be able to get that money.
By the way, now to 998,000 followers on Twitter for the Buccaneers. So just a shade under 1 million. And I know that Jenna Lane mentioned this on social media. I want to say it was
about the guy in the Cadillac smoking doobies
on Sunday, not the guy in the Cadillac smoking doobies. Although that was a funny story as well, but she pointed out how I think they were at like 750,000 followers before Tom Brady signed. And now they're up around 1 million. A lot of that has to do with Brady, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that Jill Beckman's done a really good job this year as the social media director for the Buccaneers. So you gotta
sure.
She has.
I like Jill. I know Jill. I can recognize her on site. She won't recognize me on site. I've had conversations with Jill. Mm-hmm. I think she does a very good job. I think she does a great job. Whatever accolade you're going to throw out about kind of job she does, I'm going to go one higher. Okay.
Okay.
How about that? Okay. We're not even close to 1 million without Tom Brady.
No, you're right.
Period. End of story. So
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So, but I think that, getting back to, what we were discussing when it comes to, because we were talking about weapons, we're talking about accolades and the like. I think that, you know, the people willing to put their egos aside is another big reason why things have it's worked out.
Yeah, exactly. How things work. Like, you know, and Mike Evans leads the charge on that for, you know, how his role has dramatically. Just remember, like 3 years ago, he was getting what, like 131 targets from Jameis. You know, he was getting like 13 targets a game. You know, four of them, you know, were bounced to him, but
and two more were sent the other way.
But, you know, but I mean, that's a lot. So, yeah, I think all the players have bought in. I think the coaching staff has done a great job in convincing these players to buy in. And also kudos to the players for being smart enough to realize and looking around and saying, hey, you know, everyone gets a piece of this pie and everyone's good. So, and they all have their different little techniques and roles to play. Like with AB coming, you know, like having all these wide receivers, Evans, Godwin, Miller, Tyler Johnson, none of them brings what AB brings. Like, getting AB on a screen pass and with his feet and be able to break angles with his speed and also break tackles. Like if someone's going to take a bubble screen to the house or a slant to the house or a dig to the house and make a cornerback miss in space, it's AB. He's the one who's going to do it. So he brings something that to that receiving core that we didn't have. So yeah, I'm all for it.
And I think the other piece, and I'll finish with this, sure, is as long as the overall numbers continue to stay where they are or get better,
yeah, you
know, the distribution of things is going to be something that is only noticed by people looking at, you know, wanting to get individual accolades, which, like we said, there's not that many people here that will say, I must be a Pro Bowler. You know, I need that bonus. And so I need to have things go my way and bringing discord that way. And I think that, you know, it, like you said, with OJ Howard, if he gets 32 catches, 500 yards and two touchdowns, that's fine. But if the tight ends overall, you know, have 75 catches and 880 yards and six touchdowns, you're thinking, okay, that means that not only did Howard perform, but Gronk did, and so did Brate. Same thing with the wide receivers. If let's say Mike Evans leads the team with 79 catches, but overall your wide receiving core has, you know, 230, that means that AB did his job. Godwin did his job. Scotty Miller did his job. Tyler Johnson did his job. Bernard did his job. Ronald Jones, whatever he gets thrown, he was able to take care of. And you're thinking, okay, we're still in good shape because the overall numbers, the production is still there. It's just divided up, you know, eight ways instead of four.
And the Bucs have shown that they're pro player. Like, they're pro to get these bonuses. Like, they went out of their way to get Antonio Brown that extra $250,000 or $500,000, whatever, in the last game. They just kept throwing bubble screen, short pass. He needed like eight receptions, and they threw it to him like eight of the next 10 plays.
Yeah.
And then also with this Cameron Brate thing, like, the Bucs held out as long as they possibly could before they went to Cameron Brate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember a few years ago, when Kamara, I think it was his second year maybe with the Saints, and they still had Mark Ingram, and Mark Ingram was had a bonus, had one of those incentive things for touchdowns. And the Saints would run Mark Ingram down to the goal line and put in Kamara, and Kamara would score. And Ingram started to really get pissed and hot about it, you know, and that's sort of like, yeah, but that's the difference between the Saints and, like, you know, and the Bucks. But the Saints were and have been since, you know, they sold their souls to the devil to try to get a Super Bowl for, you know, Drew Brees and organization. And maybe they just, like, they're like, look, like, we love you, Mark, and I'm sorry. And yeah, you signed it. And yeah, we're kind of like, you know, pulling a bait and switch here. But, like, we can't afford to get that money because the salary cap's so tight. So
because Drew Brees needs all the money.
Yeah, Drew Brees and all the money. And it wasn't Drew. It was big contract. But, to keep the players around him, they kicked the can down the road for, you know, their corner, and they kicked down the road for their defensive tackle and for their edges and for their offensive line. Like, they kicked the can down a lot for everybody. Drew was just getting the biggest piece of the pie.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly was. So the Buccaneers are now on their way towards organized team activities and mini camps and stuff like that because the draft is over. We haven't had a chance to talk about the draft yet. We will do that when we come back here on the PewterCast.
Hello.
Yes. All right, Ryan, we have seven players now to talk about. Yeah, seven so new members of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because by the time we get done on Thursday, the Bucs had yet to pick in the first round.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's not so much Big Storm
Riveting Brewing. Live stream.
Exactly. But thank you to Big Storm Brewing again for having us out. And thank you to Joe Bucs Fan for making that possible. So I appreciate that. It was great to see everybody from Joe Bucs Fan. You know, got to see Steve, got to see Lita Kemper. Got to see Rock Riley, got to see the one and only Ira Kaufman. And I made Ira made me feel smart by telling me that he agreed with me that the Bucs should have traded down. But they did not trade down, Ren. And so let's get right into things here at 32.
Yes.
Going with a edge linebacker, you know, an outside linebacker in Joe Tryon from Washington. What did you think about this pick? And, you know, for a guy that didn't play last year, you know, are the expectations maybe a different than, say, if he had played this past season? You know, where do you think could he have gotten a better opportunity or a higher pick if he had played last year?
Well, if he played well, sure. I mean, if you played crappy, then no. pretty simple. I want to start off by, before I get into Joe Tryon, I want to start off to say that, you know, there's a lot of talk about this year about the Bucs coming in and going, like, they can truly go BPA, you know, and a lot of us kind of thought that that's what they would do. But looking at the draft, and now that it's over, they completely threw that out the window to make another run for the Super Bowl. And I'll explain, like, there were some need picks. Edge, they had to get younger along the defensive line, either edge or defensive tackle. Did that with number one. Trask, that might be their only luxury pick of the draft for me. They like him. We have our thoughts about him. We'll talk about him in a little bit. Then you go down and you get Hainsey. Basically, he's a very cheap version of Joe Haig. We'll talk about him. And then the whole entire third day, it's all special teams. And so what the Bucs are doing is, like, what's our weakest position or group, offense, defense, special teams? It's special teams. The Bucs traditionally have been terrible on special teams.
Yeah.
They have not put any effort or draft picks or really any sort of, like, capital into special teams. And that's absolutely what they did with all these players. There were better players on the board at each position. Like, at wide receiver, when they took the wide receiver, there were better wide receivers on the board, but not better wide receivers on the board that can do what the guy can do on special teams. Same thing down the line with the linebacker, both linebackers, and the cornerback. So we'll cover all of that, and I'll give you my thoughts on sort of why they were picked, how they can help us in the future. So I think the Bucs are really betting on the coaching staff on day three to turn these guys into anything. Like, they're really saying, we can coach these guys up, but right now, why we're coaching them up, because the roster's so stacked, they don't have to play. We can really improve our special teams. And they there were certain traits they like about each guy. So Joe Tryon, if you look at Joe Tryon, you know, physically, you cannot tell me with a straight face that super serum does not exist.
I know.
This dude, like, he reminds me, remember that movie Heartbreak Ridge with Clint Eastwood?
Yes.
He takes over, like, you know, the ragtag, you know, Marine. I'm not really sure what he called, troop corps.
Yeah, it's a company. Squad,
school company. Thank you. That no one really wants, or a bunch of troublemakers, slackers, you know, don't live with potential. And then they had that one guy, Swede. Remember?
Yeah.
Swede was this, yeah, he was this dude that, you know, he's just humongous person, could barely fit in any of his clothes. And when I look at Joe Triant, it reminds me of Swede. This guy is built. Okay, big deal. I can go down to the gym and find guys that are built. What's good about him? He has all the traits to be able to become a top-tier pass rusher. He got redshirted his first year at Washington. Then he had an okay to, I think it's fair to say, lackluster first half of the 2019 season. Mm-hmm. Then he got all his 8 sacks in the second half. Everything started to come together. His athleticism, his length with his arms, his agility and his speed around the edge, like all that sort of came together. He's also, he tackles well. He, like, you know, tackles through the person, like the targets behind him. You know, he's not an arm tackler. He's going to blow you up. And another good thing that I think he fits in well with the Todd Bowles defense is that he can actually drop back in coverage, where we have seen, you know, I think the edges drop back like over 100 times in Bowles' defense last year. So JPP and Shaq Barrett dropping back in coverage, Tryon has shown he can do that. So I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. Now, this was a need draft pick. Let's not make any bones about it. I started off with that. Like, they needed to get younger and better at edge or defensive tackle. The defensive tackle group was terrible. Jason Light even said that when they signed Steve McClendon, and he had a press conference, and he goes, yeah, that's basically, you know, that's why we signed Steve McClendon, because we don't like this defensive tackle class. You know, we're good with what we got there. And he held true to that. Didn't go after a defensive tackle, even in day 3. So, Joe Tryon, right now, walking in the door, is probably projected as edge 3, which is behind JPP and Shaq. Mm-hmm. Hope Anthony Nelson can get some more tools in his tool chest, which Tryon needs as well. And by what I mean by that is, like, pass rushing moves, better hands. What Tryon lacks is a bull rush, is power. But I think it's one of those things where, if I'm such a good athlete and I can always win with speed, why would I try to bull rush you? Because I can always just win with speed. If you can't stop it, why change it, type of deal. But with the Buccaneers tier 1 coaching staff, I did hear recently that their defensive line coach won defensive line coach of the year.
Yeah, he did.
He did. Odds are he's not going to win it next year, though. That's what I've heard. And
most likely.
So he's learning behind JPP, and he's learning behind Shaq Barrett, and he's got Casey Rogers there. So I think that Joe Tryon, for sort of like, this edge class wasn't, you know, heralded as a great edge class, but I think by the end of the year, Buck fans will really be excited what Tryon can do. And mostly it's because you have to come in and start. You know, he can come in and the Bucs can let him do what he does really well in certain situations. And then, you know, and coaching him up and bringing more tools to his toolbox and learning to do some more bull rushes, use his length to spike tackles to keep their hands off him and stuff like that. So good pick, need pick. I think he's better. I think he will be better and will play better than most, like, draft gurus had him, because when you talk Joe Tryon, I felt like most people kind of started out with what he can't do instead of more what he can do.
And that's what I want to ask you about, Ren, is, sure, with Tryon, you know, you talk about him being able to speed past you as opposed to the need for a bull rush, but this is a different level. You know, the Pac-12 is a good football conference, not a great football conference, mm-mm, but it can be a good football conference, and it has good aspects. But now you're going to the National Football League, mm-hmm, where these offensive linemen are not just strong, but they are fast. Yeah. They are much quicker at that level. You know, is only being a speed guy, can it be a detriment to Tryon? And if that is the case, you know, how quickly can this, you know, this coaching staff kind of mold him to the point where maybe he is, you know, I'm sure that they're going to look at, yes, we need your goal is to stay as fast as you can, but still get stronger.
Right. I don't know if he needs to get stronger. I just think he needs to learn how to use it better. Okay. His pad levels is too high on bull. I mean, you look at the guy and it's kind of hard to say you need to get stronger. It's like, where are you going to put the muscle and the mass?
Adonis.
Like, he's popping out of his skin. Like, it's stretched to its max.
Do you remember Vincent Brown, linebacker that used to play for the New England Patriots back in the day? I just remember Paul McGuire, the old color commentator, talking about how Vincent Brown had muscles in his face. I see that out of Tryon. The guy, like, you know, do you need his traps above his ears?
Because he can do it. They're close. I mean, if you hold the camera at the right angle, they are.
it should be interesting, but I am curious about that, you know, dealing with the offensive lineman at this level as opposed to the offensive lineman at the Pac-12 level.
He probably hasn't gone up against an offensive lineman. I'm not sure if he's gonna like line up on the left or the right, or they're gonna mix it up. But you know, most edge pass rushers get into the league and they don't make this huge splash unless they're like, you know, Lawrence they would Taylor. Have been, yeah, or like Chase Young. And even Chase Young, like, he was a can't miss prospect and he still is, but he didn't have like a 12 sack season. I think he got something like eight, you know, eight and a half, something like that. So, and he plays every down. So Joe Tryon's not going to come out here and get eight sacks. You know, like, I would be happy with three. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, because JPP and Shaq Barrett just don't come off the field. They don't. Now, maybe that was because the Bucs didn't have anyone behind them really last year when it was Anthony Nelson and Cam Gill. So maybe, you know, it's like the drop-off was so big, like, you got to play. But JPP's been a guy that's always played, like, you know, somewhere over 90% of the snaps for his career. And Shaq Barrett, we don't know because we only have sort of like a two-year window, a two-year sample size of being a starter. And he played a lot both times. So we'll see how that works out. I have confidence, sort of what I alluded to before. I have confidence in the Bucs coaching staff. The Bucs coaching staff have confidence in themselves to be able to turn Tryon into something special, a guy who can be a 10 to 12 sack guy every year, because he has the height, he has the length, he has the speed, I think he has the strength. You know, I haven't watched enough of him to be able to say, like, he can't bull rush, or he just doesn't, or hasn't learned how to yet. No one sort of taught him the basics, and mostly it's because of pad level. So, but everything else, he's a hard hitter. He can drop back in coverage. If you've got six boxes to check as an edge rusher in a Todd Bowles defense, he checks five of them. So, yeah, I think he's going to be fine.
It's a pretty good thing to have, especially going into your first season at the pro level. So now we move
point right here. Sorry, by Bucs rule right here. I think on third and long, the Bucs will use Tryon and Shaq and kick JPP inside. It's a possibility. It really is. It depends on, you know, his development, you got to remember that the Bucs only play two and deer defensive linemen when they go nickel. They keep Levante David and Devin White on the field, and they take out a defensive tackle. So you're looking at JPP and Sue with Shaq and Tryon. I can see it on third and long, like third and eight, third and 12, third and 42.
Some serious coverage. That's some serious. You get a lot of coverage out of that because all of those guys can close very, very quickly. And I really do think that it's a good point. I like that.
I'm telling you, this defensive line is good enough to get somebody a defensive lineman coach of the year.
I don't doubt that at all. So let's get into what you call the only luxury pick that the Buccaneers took at 64. in the second round. Kyle Trask comes off the board. Gator fans losing their shit because I saw it on social media.
Are there Gator fans that are Buck fans? Because I follow a lot of Buck fans on Twitter, and they're like all Florida State fans. I rarely see Gator Twitter at all. And I'm a Gator fan.
Zach Blobner.
Like, well, okay, yeah, he's the one. Like, really, he's the one. But Gator Nation went crazy.
Yeah, a lot of Gator Nation went absolutely ape. You know what? When it comes to Kyle Trask, a Florida quarterback staying in the Sunshine State and being the third. Now we know who the other quarterback is.
Right.
Obviously, that means, you know, sorry, Blaine Gabbert, you're not going to get an opportunity to win 11 games here this year.
I don't know. Do you think that Blaine Gabbert's not coming back?
I can't see how you would handle having three quarterbacks plus a second round draft pick.
Yeah, you're right. That's why Ryan Griffin goes.
Even though you just signed Ryan Griffin.
Well, you signed him because you signed him before the draft, so you weren't pigeonholed into taking a quarterback if it didn't fall to you. Like, the Bucs didn't go after Trask. He fell to them. But if he didn't, then, you know, you have Ryan Griffin. But now that Trask is here, I think they're, and all reports are that they're still trying to sign Blaine Gabbert. They're not going to carry four. They're not.
No, they're certainly not going to carry four. That's certainly not going to be the case. And the question then becomes, for someone like Blaine Gabbert, you know, how much, you know, are you willing to, you know, what's the number going to end up being this year for Gabbert? You know, You know, Griffin is $925,000. That's what you'll save if you cut him before June 1st. So the difference is going to end up being probably, I would think, $650,000. You know, Gabbert gets Does Gabbert get 1.5?
No, we're going to talk about this later. It's like, I think Gabbert's going to get close to three, and they're going to have to restructure Ryan Jensen.
All right. Well, so we'll get to the maneuver.
I think Gabbert comes back and Ryan Griffin goes and Trask is three. Or no, because they put Trask on practice squad, they'll take him. I have to look at what they're going to do with practice squad. Is it going to be more like they did with the COVID rules? Is it going to be more relaxed where you can put veterans on it? I know, like, vested veterans, like, you can only put one, then they put it up to two. I think last year they had it up to four. So, but I think Ryan Griffin would be somebody who just kind of hangs out on the practice squad because he's hung out.
I think you could get Ryan Griffin through waivers. So
he doesn't go on waivers. He's a veteran. He becomes an automatic free agent.
But to get him on the practice squad,
you don't have to, you cut him and then sign him to the practice squad. He doesn't have to go through waivers. Okay. Now you can cut him and say, hey, sign the practice squad. And he goes, no. And he's automatically free agent, listen to other offers, but he doesn't have to go through waivers because he's a vet. Anyway.
So anyway,
the luxury kick, Kyle Trask.
Kyle Trask.
Sure.
He's fallen into the right spot. Trask now has an opportunity to do what Jimmy Garoppolo did, to do what Matt Cassel did, to do what Jacoby Brissett did. Is learn at the feet of the master and find out exactly what it takes to be successful at the NFL level. I think a lot of people thought that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ren.
Sure.
There are a lot of people that feel that Kyle Trask has the tools to succeed at the NFL level.
And there's just as many people feel that he doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are you on this?
Now, okay, like, I was anti drafting Kyle Trask for the Buccaneers. I wanted Davis Mills. I thought he had more tools, more upside, but also Davis Mills, the quarterback out of Stanford, he also has a lot of Jameis in him, which is like, look how strong my arm is. I can make it fit in there. You know, the gunslinger mentality. And I think BA has had enough of that. he just, you know, he wants someone who won't put the ball in harm's way almost first and foremost. Once you've sort of check off, like, okay, you can make all the throws. Okay, you can do this, like, protect the ball. What people like about Trask, or I should say what the Bucks like about Trask, is that he, like you said, learned at the feet of the master. Never started in high school, you know, was on the same high school team as, I don't remember his first name, but King, the guy who's playing quarterback at the University of Miami right now. He was stuck behind him. Mm-hmm. Goes to Florida, gets stuck behind Felipe Franks. Felipe Franks' ankle gets broken off from the rest of his leg. He comes in, leads the Gators in a comeback win against Kentucky, finishes out the season. He was okay. It was like, okay, you know, it's just another, like, Gators aren't going anywhere. Comes back for 2020, lights it up, okay? I said that, and especially because once those two players didn't play, I said, and it's sort of like the Tua and Mac Jones argument, like, well, you're playing with like five NFL players on your offense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the Mac Jones argument. Trask threw to Kyle Pitts, who was uncoverable, and Tony, Jadarius Tony, who is sort of like the closest thing that Florida's seen to Percy Harvin since Percy Harvin.
Both top 15 picks.
Yes, exactly. Now the Gators go to a bowl game. Neither of those two guys play. Trask has his worst game ever as a Florida quarterback. And it's like, so my feeling was sort of like, well, you know, once he doesn't have, you know, boys playing against men to throw to, he didn't really have a good game. That's where my stance was. That's why I didn't want Trask. That's why I wanted Davis Mills. Obviously, the Bucks feel different. They know better than I do most of the time, all the time. Sometimes. So they like his processing speed. They like that he has the makeup to sit for a while and wait for his turn and not get butt hurt about it. They like, they think he can make all the throws. They think he's very smart. So, you know, he's got the size and sort of the playing style that BA likes in his offense, which is stand in the pocket, slide around in the pocket, move in the pocket. And they talked about, Jason Light talked about a couple times about how he called him, he's smart in the pocket, which is like sliding up, sliding to the left, instead of like tucking the ball and running. He's always looking downfield and will hang in there and just, you know, take a step here or there instead of taking off with the ball, which are all things he likes. The Bucks needed someone to get in the hopper to start grooming. Is this the guy? We'll see. But it was really a luxury pick because there were better players on the board that could have helped them this season or in next season. Like, there were guys, they could have went interior offensive lineman here. Like, you know, they could have went corner here. That guys that are projected to have better pro careers consensusly than Kyle Trask. But, you know, they liked him. He was there. They've talked about trying to find a quarterback for even last year, but it just didn't fall to him, and their guy fell to him, and so there he is. And, but, yeah, you know, Kyle Trask, if he's three at best, he's the third quarterback at best, and he's not even going to be active for games. So we'll see how good this pick is possibly in a couple years. And, you know, but I like it even – I understand it. I shouldn't say I like it. I don't dislike it, but I completely understand it. Like, Kyle Trask could play out his 4-year contract and never play for the Buccaneers. You know, be Ryan Griffin, like, never thrown a pass. And then 4 years later, you know, he goes on the free agency market and he's eventually going to get his shot because someone's going to be intrigued enough to be like, well, look what happened when they finally gave him a shot. Mm-hmm. So that's where I feel about Kyle Trask.
And we've seen and in the comments, you know, starting quarterback, you can tell them in baseball mode, depth chart, Brady Gabbert and Trask, and yep. And that, you know, Bucks fans will sometimes trust Gabbert to come in to win games over guys like Trask. And you should trust Gabbert more. He's got, what, 7-8 years of experience, maybe close to a decade now of experience in the league over a guy that is never taken a snap, not even in practice in the NFL. Of course you're going to trust a guy like Gabbert. You're going to trust a guy like Griffin more than Kyle Trask, right?
But I am very excited for preseason football now because I really want to see Kyle Trask. I want to see what he does, man. I think it's going to be great. I mean, very exciting.
Should be interesting. Now, in the third round, Ren, at 95, this is the pick that kind of I was like, ooh, because at the end of the third round, or when the third round was wrapping up, I'm going, Quinn Meinerz is still there.
Yeah.
Meinerz is still there. And at 95, Meinerz is there. This is a Jason Light special. Come on. You're talking about a guy that played interior offensive lineman in Wisconsin at a small school in Wisconsin in high school. Wisconsin
Whitewater Warhawks.
And even before that was at a small school in a small town in rural Wisconsin at Hartford Union as a high schooler. This is right up Jason Light's alley. Mm-hmm. And instead he goes with Robert Hainsey from Notre Dame, who is a guard as opposed to a guy that could play center and guard. Is Jason going for a guy from a bigger school as opposed to a guy like Quinn Meinerz that I was all excited. I was like, I'm going to get one of these picks right.
Right. Carney's best bet.
McCartney's best bet was that they were going to take Quinn Meinerz at 95. They go with Robert Hainsey instead.
Sure.
I mean, I like the fact that, you know, this is a guy that's got a lot more big game experience playing at Notre Dame as opposed to Wisconsin Whitewater.
Oh, okay. Well, here's where I'll start. One, Hainsey is not a guard, and he started 3 years at Notre Dame at right tackle. Okay. So that's what the Bucks like. He can play tackle. Meinerz cannot play tackle.
No.
Hainsey went to the Senior Bowl and they're like, hey, can we try to get guard center? And he said, yeah. And not only did he say, yeah, he performed really well. And that's sort of what bumped him up the Bucks board, because they needed that Joe Haig's gone. They needed someone to fill that role. Joe Haig made $3 million last year. This guy's going to make something like $500,000. You know, he's going to make $3 million for the next 4 years. So it's a cheaper upgrade, helps on the salary cap. And they think he can play four positions. They don't think he can play left tackle, but they think he can play right tackle in a pinch. And really what they're doing is they're getting a guy who think they can coach up to play guard. They can coach up and play center. And whichever one he becomes best at, then you can look forward to replacing either Alex Kappa or possibly Ryan Jensen if they don't restructure, but I think they're going to have to. So that's where that pick is. It's their utility knife that's going to be active every Sunday. It's going to be Josh Wells. And I know Aaron Stinney did great, but if Hainsey just does what he did in college and projects, like, it doesn't, you know, blossom, go, oh my God, he's so much better than we thought, but doesn't fall on his face and just projects for what the Bucks think he will be as a rookie, he's the other guy that's going to be active, because they can plug him in at right tackle, right guard, left guard, and center. Josh Wells will be the guy that's going to plug in at left tackle. And that's what they're going to roll with. And it's for that reason, it's a great pick. I mean, it's a need pick is what it is. Instead of going out and finding someone for $3 million, $4 million, $5 million to sort of be that, you know, guy that can play three positions on the interior line, they went and found a guy that could do it for four, and they got him for super cheap. So, and they needed it. Like, you know, they needed that player. Now, let's talk about him. Just a guy who wants to bury you, has that attitude. Oh, and sorry, with Meinerz, he's a center that can probably play guard, because most centers and guards can play. And the reason those guys don't play on the outside is because their arms aren't long enough.
Yeah.
And that's why with Hainsey be able to play that extra position, I think that's probably the main reason, would be my opinion, that they went with Hainsey over Meinerz. Now, what can Hainsey do? Like I said, he wants to bury people. He will chase people all over the field, trying to, according to John Ledger on this, he will chase people around just to try to bury them. What he's really good at is he just never, once he locks up on a guy, he never lets him go. Like, they may counter, he'll counter back. He's got good hands with that. And he either wins, I guess is the best way to put it. He either wins, but when he loses a rep, he still doesn't give up a sack. He holds on he holds on for dear life long enough to keep the guy away from the quarterback. Mm-hmm. What he's missing is sort of junk in the trunk. a little strength. He can get bull rushed, but he, like I said, he's still going to lock up with the guy and they can walk him back, but he's going, but they're not going to blow through him. They'll walk him back, but it's going to be a battle the whole entire way. And he's never going to give up and that type of deal. So I think the Bucks again are counting on their coaching staff to be able to train this guy up, maybe transform his body in the weight room like they did with Alex Kappa. Mm-hmm. And I know people say, well, it took 3 years for Kappa. Really, it only took two because the strength and the conditioning staff wasn't the same when he was drafted to when BA came in. So really, he only did it in one season.
Yeah.
You know, he came in, which was last year or 2 years ago with Alex Kappa. They saw what they had. He did his off-season program, transformed his body, came back, and Kappa went from a guy that we were just happy not to hear his name called for, you know, giving up sacks and holding calls his second year to his third year, who was the only member along the offensive line who didn't give up a sack and made the most money. And I'm not really sure what it's called, but he outperformed his contract. There's this mm-hmm. thing in the NFL where it's like arbitration. It's like, okay, you know, you're a third round draft pick. This is what your salary was. But since you played so well, you played above it, we're going to give you this amount of money. Alex Kappa made the most. He had the biggest leap. He, like, through that scale, Alex Kappa did the best.
Yeah.
So I think the Bucks are counting that they can do the same thing with Hainsey. And I'm excited about it. I think it's a good pick. Again, there were better, you could have went with a guy who probably is a much better center and guard right now with Quentin Miners. You know, you could have went corner here that probably has probably had a better overall draft grade
yep.
than Hainsey at this point. But besides the first pick, which could have been BPA, I don't think so. There was a couple of interior offensive linemen with Tryon. Like, all this talk about BPA, they didn't do it for anybody.
No, they didn't.
They went need, luxury, need, and then they just upgraded the special teams. So, again, I like the pick. You probably could have got a better player, but it's not going to help you for 2 years, you know, unless there's an injury down the road. And this guy's going to play this year, you know, because someone's going to get hurt and he's going to come in on jumbo packages. And this is what he's there for. He is Joe Haig.
Versatility is nice. And like I said, I like the experience factor that he brings yeah. because he's played big time, not just at Notre Dame, but this is an IMG kid.
Yeah.
This guy got to play the best of the best all the way back into high school.
Yeah. And he moved from like Michigan or something. Like IMG yeah. contacted him. Like, you want to come down here?
He moved from Pennsylvania, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So. In high school to come to IMG to basically, I don't even really know what IMG is. Like, IMG Academy, is it like I always kind of thought it was like a place where people just kind of work out.
Yeah. It's like football prep. My buddy Ryan Sudol does a lot of stuff with
IMG. Is it a school?
Yeah. They've got a school down there. They have a high school. It's like a private high school where the kids just beat the hell out of everybody else because they can get guys to move
because they bring guys from Pennsylvania.
they're bringing the best of the best, not just in the area, but around the country.
So IMG, it's a prep academy that
it's a sports prep academy
that is molding people for college. Under the guise of a high school.
Yep.
Okay.
It's exactly what it is.
Okay.
Now we had one of those back when I was in Rhode Island. It's called Bishop Hendrickson High School. It's an all boys Catholic high school that recruits all around New England and gets kids to move down into Rhode Island, and they just win
and they go stomp everybody.
Yeah, you know, they beat the hell out of everybody. It's ridiculous. I hate it. I hate it dealing with
them. Can't believe there's not big competition in Rhode Island high school football.
No, but I'm saying they beat the hell out of everybody in football, in baseball, in basketball.
Oh, they do it for all sports.
They beat the crap out of everybody, and they recruit not just Rhode Island, but Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire. They get kids to move down from everywhere in New England and just beat the tar out of everybody. Hate them.
All right.
All right. So let's get into day three.
Sure.
you know, we've talked a lot about Jalen Darden. I saw some comments talking about Darden being kind of the
Darlin. I like that.
Jalen Darden.
Darlin. Jaden Darlin. I'm going to call him Jaden Darlin from now
Jaden
on.
Darlin, yeah. So Darden, this is the guy that I think, you know, his, yeah, and you mentioned this at the very beginning, you know, his special teams, and being the return guy, you know, that was the one piece that I think the Bucs really had their biggest problems with last year, was knowing who was going to be their punt returner, their kick returner. Right. And now you've got a guy, you know, who is going to slot really well into those spots to be a returner. You know, he's got speed.
Yeah.
And I really think that, you know, when you're looking to upgrade your special teams, you want a guy that can hold on to the football. You want a guy that's got some speed. That's Darden.
Yeah. Yeah. The Bucs are really hoping he can win the punt return and maybe the kickoff return as well. Probably both. They're going to try him out there. He didn't do a lot of it in college. He's from North Texas. There's some interesting stats about the guy. First off, he's small. He's like 5'9". He doesn't weigh that much, you know.
What was the guy that the Bucks had a couple of years ago? He was in Denver. Trendon Holiday. That guy, he used to play for the Broncos. He was the returner for the Broncos. He was like 5'6". Like he was little.
I don't really remember him at all.
I think he signed with the Bucks and then he got hurt. So I don't know how much he played, but I just remember Holiday is the guy that Pat McAfee blew up. That was the first time I ever saw Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee like blew him up out, threw him off the sidelines on a return. But that's what Darden reminds me of. He's a taller version of Holiday.
Taller than the guy's 5'6".
Well, that's what I'm saying, because Darden's 5'9", Holiday. Right. Holiday was listed at 5'6", so he's probably like 5'4".
No one gives a shit about Holiday.
No, but I'm saying, but a quick guy that you use as a returner.
I think that he's going to be Cheetah Light, is what they're hoping. Because if you remember when the Chiefs took... How come I can't remember the guy's name? I can never remember that guy's name. I always want to call him Cheetah. What the hell is that guy's name?
Tyreek Hill.
Thank you. When they took Tyreek Hill, people were like, whoa, what a, like, Chiefs, what are they doing? What a stretch. And his first year, all he really did was return and some gadget plays. And people were like, okay, he's got a lot of speed. Okay, I can get it, but it's still first round. And then here comes Patrick Mahomes next year. And then now they unleash Tyreek Hill and get him some packages, and he understands some of the nuance, teach him the nuances of the wide receiver position. And now he's one of the, you know, the biggest weapons in the NFL, one, you know, top 10 weapon, whatever you want to put it, but he's very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that these guys are 1-1 comp. I'm saying that this is the type of style of play. It's almost like, I think somebody said earlier in chat, you get AB vibes, and that's what it is. It's someone who can win with their feet. He has elite feet. Now, North Texas led the nation in touchdowns, 18 touchdowns last year. Also, he led the nation in separation, which is key. Now, you're going, well, in North Texas, like, who do you play? You know, Scott Backley is your quarterback. Kathy Ireland's your kicker. Like, you know, like, what's going on here? But what's special about Darling is that when he cuts, he doesn't lose speed. Like his top end, he gets to top end speed very fast. His top end speed is good. It's probably in the 90th percentile in the NFL. It's not Cheetah speed, but he can get there very quick. So if you get there faster than the guy next to you, by the time, first off, they got to be faster than you, which is, you know, we're going to say one out of every 10 cornerbacks or safeties that he's racing can catch him. Mm-hmm. But since he gets to the top end speed faster, he's pulling away until that corner or safety gets to their top end speed, and then they have to start to close it. But he's fast enough where now it's too late. Okay? Comes out of breaks, in and out of breaks, doesn't lose any speed. That's how he gets his separation. He's just a very explosive football player. Now, toughness, he has worked very hard on transforming his body into like adding weight, adding muscle, you know, taking a beating for that position. And he's worked really hard at it and done a really good job out of it. So he's kind of like a diamond in the rough, but he has absolutely been brought here to win the punt return job and possibly probably the kickoff return job. And then moving forward, get, you know, sort of taking over that AB role, not as the same type of player, but if he sticks or if he makes a team this year and sticks around in the future, that thing that AB brings to the Buccaneers, which I talked about earlier, which is be able to take the screen pass all the way, be able to take the slant all the way, be able to make just one guy miss or break a tackle, which he's also very good at for his size, oddly enough. Talking about Darling here, that he can bring that element to the game, which is the Bucs don't have in the wide receiver room. But make no doubt about it, this was like, we want to get better at special teams. We're gonna go get our special teams weapon.
Yeah, I certainly think that this is the special teams weapon. And then in after that, they went out and got two guys that will hopefully be able to, on the other side of the special teams coins, make stops on special teams. Yeah. In the fifth round, taking KJ Britt out of Auburn, and then in the seventh round, Chris Wilcox, corner out of BYU, gunner type, and then Grant Stewart, out of Houston as Mr. Irrelevant. These are guys that they're expecting to make stops on special teams.
Yeah. KJ Britt, throwback linebacker. Like, I think I was watching another pod, and somebody in the comment section goes Mason Foster ? And I think that's it. This guy, he's not Devin White fast, but he hits like Devin White. He's going to fill the hole. I think that possibly he could be a better version of someone like Quan Alexander. And these aren't great comps, but I'm using comps that people that listen to the pod will be able to understand. I think he's a better tackler than Quan Alexander. I think he understands run fits better than Quan Alexander. He's not as fast as Quan Alexander, so he might not be the sideline to sideline guy, but I don't think he's any worse in coverage, because Quan Alexander was terrible in coverage. So this is how I see Britt on this team coming up. One, like you obviously said, we talked about it, special teams. He's a very sure tackler. So they got a thumper, a guy with like an attitude, doesn't take crap off of nobody, and is going to, you know, be one of the leaders and hype men for the special teams and go out there and back it up. Now, as far as making the fourth and off-ball linebacker, if he has to play this year, what he can do is play very good against the run. In coverage, you're going to have to hide him. So what if he's end up playing, when we go to nickel, it's going to have to be more traditional nickel. He's going to have to come off the field, and whichever one of the linebackers is healthy. So you're going to leave either Devin White or Levante David on the field as the single linebacker in a traditional nickel, and keep your five, you know, defensive linemen up front. And that's just what's going to happen. And then you'll bring, what you can do is bring Sean Murphy Bunting down, of course, as a nickel. But if the Bucs want to do and just do the four linemen like they normally do, then you have the flexibility of having Antoine Winfield Jr. play down in the box as sort of like the Joker linebacker.
Yeah, the hybrid,
right? A guy that that's good enough tackler to stop the run and be able to stand up against a little bit, set the edge, you know, be able to take out blockers, so you know, other safeties coming up can make the tackle on outside runs and things of that nature. So that's where I see KJ Britt if he has to play this year. I think if he develops in coverage, which is something that I think can happen, because we have seen Devin White go to, you're doing absolutely the wrong thing, and it feels like you have no idea what you're doing in coverage, to getting COVID, to coming back to being one of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL. I can't explain it. I don't know how. I don't know why. It just might be something that, you know, something just clicked and said, yeah, I know you're doing this, but you need to do that. And he just went, yeah, I can do that. And also now it works. Now, do I think KJ Britt can do that? Probably not, because that was close to a miracle, what Devin White did as far as his coverage coming back after COVID. But this is what KJ Britt will do this year. Again, special teams upgrade. Wilcox, very long, tall corner out of BYU, another very sure tackler, hasn't missed a tackle since 2017, which is weird because he tackles high. He gets a lot of pass breakups. he's not quite a ball hawk, but he knows that and he's trying to work on it because he has no interceptions in his college career whatsoever. But he fits what the Bucs want him to do. The reason he's here is because he doesn't miss tackles. You're looking at the new that they're looking at the guy that wants to be the new Ryan Smith, the new gunner, the guy that can get down the field, have the length, have the wing spread, the arm to keep the, you know, the gunner blockers. What, you call them gunners too. Like, what do you call the guys that are defending the gunners?
The defenders. That's what okay, I call
defenders. So keep the gunner defenders off him. He's got the length to be able to do that. He's got enough. He ran like a 4.31 in his pro day. He didn't think he was going to run that. So you're looking at the gunner. You're looking at the Bucs want him to make the Pro Bowl as a gunner and develop him, betting on their coaching staff to be able to next year when the Bucs have to throw a ton of money at Carlton Davis, and the year after that, all of a sudden we have Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy bunting up. Possibly Wilcox could be a cheaper version to make that decision a little easier, because the Bucs have come out and told people in the know that next year they're not going to have enough money to bring everybody back. People are going to start having to leave, either that be Jensen or Kappa or God forbid Chris Godwin or God forbid Carlton Davis. Like JPP's contract's up, Will Golson's contract's up, Sue's contract's up. So some of these guys are going to depart next year. If Wilcox can develop, he might be able to slide right in if the Bucs have to eventually let go of either Dean or Bunting.
And then Stewart, Mr. Irrelevant.
Big hair, don't care, built like a fire plug, has T-Rex arms, plays at a million miles an hour, going to be another one of those heart and soul special teamers. And he can tackle, but that's it. He's a heat-seeking missile. Has no athletic ability, talking about pro level here. Arms are too short. He's too short, you know, and all these guys are, but especially this
plays like his ass is on fire.
Plays like his ass is on fire. Super high character kid. I hope he makes the team. He'll be somebody that everybody's rooting for. Mm-hmm. They're going to love him. Fans are going to love him for what he stands for and what he is and the way that he plays. But yeah, he might really be it might be like the Kenny Britt Stewart show, and whoever plays better on special teams gets that. But I think Britt has a higher ceiling because he's a bigger linebacker, mm-hmm. and he has the skills and the size and the strength to keep guys coming to the second level off him way better than Stewart can. If Stewart hangs around in the league, he's just going to be Steve Tasker. Yeah, he's just going to be a guy that, like, or not even, that might be even too high. He's just going to be, he's going to play out his rookie contract and be an awesome special teamer. And then, you know, it's time to re-sign him. And it's like, good luck in free agency because we're not going to pay you, you know, $2 million to play 8 plays a game.
And you said people are going to be rooting for Stewart. I'm already rooting for Stewart.
Me too.
Because, you know, I'm sure, you know, everybody has seen the comments that he has made about, you know, his family life and, you know, mm-hmm. his father being in and out of prison, his mother being, you know, in the,
she had
the
drug the problems
line, and drug problems. She was a sex worker.
Yeah.
You know, it's a crazy story.
It's a movie.
Yeah, it is a movie, but but you're already rooting for the kid, and I'm sure there isn't a Bucs fan out there that isn't going, if this guy makes the team, you know, we're all going to be waiting for that moment where he gets in so we can all just go ballistic and watch him run around like his shorts are on fire. Should be an interesting time here as we go through mini camps and go through the team activities and the training camp. That those are all still to come. But are the Bucs done maneuvering their cap? Certainly doesn't seem like that. We've got a couple of moves that the Bucs may still need to do in order to be ready for 2021. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the PeterCast. So the draft is over, Ren, and now comes the point where we've got to sign all these guys and we've got to get the oh crap fund reestablished in case things come down, the in case of emergency break glass issues. And we've talked about this a little bit. There's one move that I think you and I are both in favor of happening. There are two others that I've been looking at and going, ooh, could this be a possibility? Of course, the one that you and I have both said needs to happen is a contract reworking of Ryan Jensen. You know, couple of extra voidable years, you're able to change his cap number from the $10 million it is now. Mm-hmm. And you know, you give them an extra year and two voidable years, or just two voidable years, and now you've changed his number from 10 million to 3.5 million or 4 million at that point. I think that you and I are both in agreement that needs to happen.
Right. I don't think you need quite that much. Like, because I think the Bucks right now are about like, I want to say like just over 3 million. And that's going to, you know, so they need about another 3 million, 4 million to sign their draft picks and have about 3 million left over.
Yeah.
2.5 million for the emergency fund. So like if they can knock it down to 7-6 is probably where, you know, I would think they'll be aiming at. And, you know, so free up like 4 million and bump up their salary cap to 7 million. I think that'll take care of it.
Yeah,
but everything else, I completely agree.
Overthecap.com has the Bucks at 5.6 after the reworking of Cameron Brate's pay cut, but it does not have Antonio Brown.
And that was three. I think it was three, right?
Yeah. They have Overthecap.com has Brate at 1.8, 1.81 to be exact, right now. And so at least I think, that's the right number. Yeah, 1.81, but they don't have Antonio Brown's deal on here yet. As you mentioned, that's right around
four. They have about four, so they have about 4 million.
Yeah. So the other two pieces that I'm looking at.
I want to hear this.
I want to hear what you think about this.
Okay.
One guy that you mentioned is going to be.
I cannot believe you brought that up. I don't. But I'm sorry, I was just practicing.
So the first guy I want to bring up is a guy that is a free agent at the end of this year.
Okay.
And that is Will Golston.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe using him as a piece to, I guess you could actually extend in order to bring his number down. You could extend him an extra year and save looks like $2 million on his cap number by extending him an extra year.
What's he at now?
He's at 5.5.
So you're saying give him a year, guarantee it, and cut his salary in half.
Cut his salary almost in half.
That would do it, because if we projected that we're at four after the Antonio Brown, because he hasn't signed the contract yet, but we know how much it is, and push it up to six, that could do it.
That could do it. The other guy that is interesting is Ali Marpet, mm-hmm. Because right now the way that Marpet's deal is, you could actually, you know, and Over the Cap talks about this, you could restructure Marpet and save almost $6 million.
How much do you have to push down the road?
Right now it looks like you would have to push about half of it down.
So he's making like 12.
His number is 12. You could restructure it and push it to six and move it all down. You know,
how long is Ali's contract? When's it end?
Ali's contract right now, as I pull that up, he is signed through 2023.
Okay, and what is his cap hit next year and in 2023?
His cap hit next year right now is $11 million, and in 2023 is $12 million.
Okay, so it stays roughly the same.
So it's about the same. So if you were to restructure it, you would move that up, say, and three. So you would bump those up.
And his cap hit would be 15.
It would be 14 and 15.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Allie's not going anywhere. So, you know, it's another idea. I just don't know how much. Now, something has to be done. All right. Yes. You know, Jensen seems the most obvious one, but he is 30. So let's go against. Why not Jensen? Because he's 30 years old and you haven't done it yet. So why not? And that's kind of where I'm at on that. How much do you want to guarantee? He's making a lot of money for a center. And you just drafted a guy that possibly can be on the cheap after that. Maybe you want to get him in camp and see what he does at center before you sort of make or do not make that commitment to Ryan Jensen. Will Golston, I like, also a guy who's hitting 30 now. People have been trying to get rid of Will Golston forever. I don't know why. You can't replace him. You can't replace a starting defensive tackle for $6 million. You can't replace him for that. Like, so why are you sending him away? And I would, and if Golston's willing to hold off free agency for another year and then get on the other side of 30 for another, you know, for another $6 million, and he wants to do that, I say that would be the one I would do. I think, because that's the safest, I think, and you're not paying above board, and you're not pushing a lot of money that down, you know, down the road.
As opposed to Marpet.
But Marpet is probably the safest because he's not going anywhere. You know, he will be here throughout the end of the contract. And I'm sure the Bucks right now, if they had a choice and you said, hey, do you want to sign Marpet, you know, to a contract? Are you guys going to send Ali Marpet to a contract after 2023 season? Everyone's going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is he not going anywhere next year or this year, or next year or the year after that, like the Bucks probably have him in the future. So it's probably the safest because what you're doing is you're pushing it down the road and you're guaranteeing the money and that's going to go against the cap. And if that player leaves, it goes or gets cut or, you know, then that is becomes dead money. Mm-hmm. Ali Marpet leaving is the least one likely. Of the three. Yeah, least yeah. likely. Thank you. One of the three. So dead money doesn't come into play going with Ali. So I think Golston probably be the cheapest. Jensen would probably
be the smartest,
be the most likely, and Ali would probably be the safest.
I think either way, you probably need to have at least one of these done. And
something needs to be done.
Something has to be done in order to sign your draft picks and get to a point where you feel comfortable.
Yeah. If
something hits the fan, that you're able to maneuver at that point. So we'll see what happens. We still got plenty of time, to discuss that. And I'm sure there'll be other scenarios that come up. So, I mean, you know, will they look at, you know, Evans or Godwin or, you know, some of these other guys that you could maneuver around in order to make it happen. But I think you're right. It's got to be one of those three. Well, we've done 90 minutes here, Ren.
I know.
So it is time now for the Ren Addiction as we get on out of here. Ren, tell everybody where they can find you.
Best place to find me is on Twitter at Rendax, RAN_DAXT. But nowadays, the best place to find me is on Twitter at the PeterCast. That's the one I use the most now. So you'll be talking to me either way. But if your take is too hot and you don't want to put it out there in a Twitter sphere, feel free to slide in my DMs and I can talk Buccaneers football with you there as well too. But since I didn't say I'll talk Buccaneers football the first time, I probably shouldn't say as well too. So I will talk Buccaneers football with you there if you'd like.
It's a good place. It's a good place to talk Bucs football, and you can always hit me up on social media. I am at Steve Carney, and you can catch us right here at PeterCast.com, PeterCast.live, and of course on the Fan Sided Network. That'll do it for this episode. We appreciate you checking us out. Make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening to so you never miss an episode. And until next time, go Buck yourself.